Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 276 for comics originally released on November 21st, 2012. Starting us off in DC is Blue Beetle number 14. Now, this title is actually going to be ending with number 16. It's one of the lower selling books at DC, which I think is kind of a shame. It's a good book. You know, I think the title, I mean, the character is fun. I've liked Blue Beetle. I like the previous run of Blue Beetle. I think some of the ground they're covering here is thematically similar to what they covered originally with The Reach and stuff like that. But this is kind of a second pass at it. And frankly, I think they're doing a tighter job on the story and, you know, treating The Reach a lot better and stuff in terms of getting to the point, making it a serious threat, what have you. And I think it's really a shame that a title that's got, you know, really solid writing, you know, really good art that's very much in sync with the story, you know, we're only going to have for a few more issues before, you know, Blue Beetle kind of, you know, lands over in that new Threshold title. So it's, you know, I enjoyed this issue, but it's one of those things that not enough people are, so, you know, it's not going to last much longer.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's already got its death note, so I mean, it doesn't, to some extent, matter how good it was. I loved this issue. I've been really enjoying it. I think it's kind of sad that, you know, when something's a little off the, you know, the core DC superhero message, it just doesn't do good. But I mean, that's what DC sells. I mean, they sell the Justice League characters and Batman. And when they do these other titles, they just don't do anywhere near as good. That's what people go to DC for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they try. I mean, you give a lot of credit. They try all these other things. But when they try something that's, you know, kind of off, too far off on the side, it just does not resonate with their audience, it seems.
I wouldn't even consider this too far off on the side, though. Well, I mean, this is a character that used to be part of the Teen Titans. Blue Beetle has a long-established history since Crisis in the DC Universe, the various Blue Beetles and stuff. This is standard superheroic stuff mixed in with some space stuff. So really, not that different than, say, a Green Lantern title, other than it's a Blue Beetle versus
other than,
a Green Lantern.
Other than it's not Green Lantern. that's the thing, you know? It's like, you look at all the stuff at DC that does well, and it doesn't stray too far outside of, you know, kind of like the core Justice League type of titles. You know,
well,
classic.
Specifically the core Justice League characters.
Right, exactly.
Because this is that type of title, is my point. It's just not one of those characters.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, is like the Big Seven type of characters seem to do well for them. That's why I'm like really curious about, you know, they're trying to start up a Vibe title. And it's like, really? That's going to go over like a lead brick.
It might even do better, though, than the Katana title, because at least the Vibe one's going to be presumably very hooked into the Justice League of America series. I mean, I get that they're trying to do stuff. I appreciate that. I'm glad they gave Blue Beetle a shot. Again, I thought it was good stuff. You know, there are a few things where, you know, I don't think they're telegraphing, but I can see where they're going with some of this stuff. But to me, that's as much they're playing fair as anything else. But, you know,
even when they try to shoehorn these different characters into the Justice League, how well do they do? You know, like even now that they have rebooted the Justice League in the New 52 and Cyborg is a founding member. And Cyborg's been on TV. He's been in the new Teen Titans. I don't think Cyborg could carry a series successfully.
I think it would depend on the creative team. I think because he's part of the Justice League right now, he's got a shot. Do I think it's a surefire hit? No. But is it worth trying? Definitely. I would have tried a Cyborg series before I would have tried a Vibe or a Katana series. I mean, he's got, like you said, the name recognition both from the New Teen Titans, the old Super Friends show, that kind of stuff. And the theory would be, well, he's a Justice Leaguer, could tie into that series, which is one of the top selling books at DC. throw in some Batman guest appearances and stuff, you know, because he's arguably a tech support guy for Batman 2. At least it looks that way in the Justice League book, not that it looks that way in any of the Batman books. And you could shore up the sales that way. I mean, I think they could get at least 40, 50,000 units for at least an initial story arc or two for a Cyborg series. Whereas the sales are leveling out around the 15,000-ish ballpark with Blue Beetle, with a bit of an uptick on issue 13. And that's just not strong enough sales to be worth continuing with. Mm-hmm. I respect the fact that they're going to continue the story of the character in Threshold, so it's not like, you know, the series is done and poof, this character's just not going to be seen again. That's happened a few times. Specifically with, I guess, the Blackhawk characters went into Voodoo. Of course, that title is now ending. Those characters are going to, I think, go into Grifter. Of course, that title is now ending. But then, like, Static, we haven't really seen since his series ended. It's one of those things that they've got to try stuff, and DC's in a bit of a pinch of really launching new titles. Or launching new properties, I should say. Let me clarify it that way. Their miniseries, where they've tried out a lot of new things, have not been going over gangbusters. They get to where some of their second-tier titles, or third-tier titles, depending how you look at it, are getting down in this 15,000 range, and they're having to end those. And some of these are characters that previously have had go-rounds of, you know, 60 issues or so. I mean, Captain Atom, originally, back in the I guess it was the 90s, did reasonably well for a while.
Yeah, you know, they seem to have an ability back then to do lots of these series that, you know, I mean, even look, Blue Beetle ran for a decent number of issues. Booster Gold ran for a decent number of issues. Firestorm ran for a decent number of issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays, almost anything that gets started up, if it makes it to issue 12, it's shocking. You know, it's like, wow. I mean, that's a bit of an exaggeration, since, you know, most of the new 52 made it to 12, but, you know, let's say 20 as the number that is the shocking.
Well, I would say 12 is the mark of viable. If it can't last a year, it's like, come on, yeah. then you're a maxi series. Yeah.
But even this one, I mean, it's only going to make it to 16. And this was, you know, probably out of the new 52 in the top 10 for me personally of the new 52.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not making it past issue 16.
Yeah.
Which just tells me, you know, it's like I'm kind of out of sync with what DC's core audience is wanting to read from DC.
I would argue you're just getting a little out of sync with what the core audience wants to read kind of in general. And that's not a bad thing.
Well, yeah, of the big two.
Which is like the top third of the top 300 every month.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of the stuff you're really enjoying is not stuff that's getting that mainstream either market exposure, penetration, or success, which is a shame because some of the stuff is really good. But how often in the mail reports have we talked down at the bottom of the top 300 and you're like, yeah, I'm reading all these things. Whereas at the top of the 300, there's a lot of things, you know, like the Avengers versus X-Men stuff or whatnot, that you're simply just not reading. And again, there's nothing right or wrong. Everybody should read what they enjoy for whatever reasons, you know, and so forth. But it makes me question how much of the sales at the top of the charts are flash-in-the-pan type sales that are, you know, hot at the moment and then people move on. Whereas I think historically, readers like you and I have been long-term readers on titles, loyal readers for publishers. And certainly in your case, I think they've gotten to the point where they've burned you out on a lot of titles. They've kind of gotten you off a number of titles. And then titles like this, Blue Beetle, that you're liking and enjoying, they end. And if that doesn't go towards a really churn-based model on both sides of the equation, the people who are naturally churn-based, they'll get on for an arc and then off. And then people who get on for titles and then they get canceled. It means they've got to be spending more time and effort marketing. I mean,
And what are they going to replace it with, right? Because I'm absolutely not interested in Vibe and Katana, you know. So
with Threshold being a $3.99 book, you may or may not get that.
Yeah, I probably will try Threshold because that sounds like it's more in my interest area. But you know, I was thinking now I get like a little worried. It's like, wow, I'm interested in this book. That must mean that it's doomed because it's something that I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Whereas I usually think if I'm getting off a book, it probably is doomed. Cause, you know, I'm a fairly easy sell these days. I mean, I think a little bit of a harsh critic at times, but, you know, I'll give stuff a shot. And I really want to see what these creators go and do because, again, I'm liking the story. I'm liking the art here in Blue Beetle. I hope they're able to follow, this up with a property that's simply more commercially viable, but of equal or better quality. I mean, to me, this was a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm close to giving this one a 5 out of 5, and I think I will. I really liked this issue a lot. I've been loving the series. Like I said, I mean, it's the top 10 DC series. It's one of my favorite things that they're doing, and I really enjoyed this issue. They did a lot of cool new things with the Beetle armor. Good twist at the end. You know, and it's just, I see it rushing towards the conclusion. You know, this was a great comic.
Cool. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Indestructible Hulk, #1. I love this issue. This was, you know, Marvel Now. A lot of people have been loving Marvel Now, and that's great. You know, I myself, I've tried all the, well, not all of them. I've tried all the #1s so far, with the exception, I guess, of X-Men Legacy, if that was a #1.
That was a #1.
And it's funny because I had my thoughts on what I was going to like. And I've been not necessarily in reality liking what I thought I was going to like. This was the one that I actually was right on. I mean, I saw Mark Waid, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I think I'll like it because it's Mark Waid. And I did. I read this. I loved it. I thought it was a great issue. This one, even Lentil Yu's art, which I'm kind of hit or miss on, it really worked for me in this issue.
Well, that's an improvement. You didn't used to be hit or miss on him. You used to just be miss on him.
Yeah.
At one point, you were rating him as the worst artist at Marvel, I think.
This issue made him hit or miss because now he's a hit in this one. But I'm not generally a fan of his art style. Some people love him, and that's great. I mean, in this issue, he's growing on me. Maybe that's just that I've seen it enough that he's just grown on me. But I really liked Wade's take on the Hulk here.
Mm-hmm. I am coming at this from a different vantage point than you are, because you gave up on the last series early in the first arc.
Yes.
Whereas I read all 3 story arcs in the previous Hulk series, and I really enjoyed the last 2. I agree the first one was kind of shaky. And generally, I really like Mark Waid's writing. So I was looking forward to this take on the Hulk. But this series didn't start off from exactly where the last one ended in terms of the Hulk-Banner relationship. And it didn't blatantly disagree with it, but it had a very different vibe to it. This had Banner kind of managing the Hulk condition, you know, like it's a disease or a chronic illness or something, versus where the last series ended of him very much having kind of teamed up with the Hulk. And it's one of those things that the issue, you know, I think it was a good jumping on point for the title. I don't think it was a good jumping on point for the Hulk. I think it was a good one for Banner. The Hulk in this issue is this silent brute who's used like a weapon, not as a character. And, you know, the final arc of the previous series was good. This is a good lead-in, but that previous arc was a bad lead-in for this series and this take. If there had been some sort of space between them, some kind of, I don't know, they went from having a truce to, you know, Banner's attitude towards the Hulk is fundamentally different than it was last month in the last issue of Hulk I read.
I look at this as, in a lot of the Marvel Now, there doesn't appear to be any kind of a thought process whatsoever in having the previous series be in any way kind of a lead up or a setup for the Marvel Now version. I mean, look at Iron Man, right? I mean, you read the last issue of the previous series and then the first issue, the other one, it's like, what? How do these things fit together?
Even with this, we reviewed not the final issue of the previous Hulk series, but the previous one to that. So I don't blame Waid for any of this. I mean, Waid wrote the story he wrote. He did a good job. You know, the previous creative team, you know, on the last two arcs did a good job. I blame the editor, Mark Panisa, or whatever. I'm sorry for mispronouncing the name. I'm bad with that. But this guy edited both this story and the previous series. You know, and again, to your point of they didn't use one to lead into the other. And in this case, the previous arc almost undercut this by not only not setting it up well, but kind of setting up a counterpoint to it. You know, I was going into this expecting there to be, you know, on-the-fly fluid changes between Banner and the Hulk as the situation dictated, to where both would have their time in the spotlight, both would be viable characters, and it would be an actual kind of a solo team-up book, if you will. And that's not what I got here. And that lack of any kind of a good transition, and the previous team kind of, again, stealing Wade's thunder to a degree, I completely blame on the editor. There should have been better communication about what each team was doing to the other one, so they could have planned better and had it, you know, dovetail better. I mean, I look back at the transition when Bendis got off Daredevil years ago, and the other creative team just came in without missing a beat, and the title just flowed beautifully. That's how they should be handling some of this. Sure, the status quo may change, but build up to that appropriately and not almost, again, get to the same end result, but with a very different vibe between the two stories. You know, the fact that the Hulk just kind of shows up here and says nothing, not even a Hulk smash, or, you know, we got no level of no way to judge what level of intelligence the Hulk character currently has. And this is, again, a very different mindset for Banner than we had just last month. Again, I don't blame the issue. I certainly don't blame Mark Wade. But the editorial team, I think, at Marvel is really dropping the ball on this.
I think Marvel is looking at these new ones as their chance to get people to jump on. So, you know, they are having this kind of institutionalized, you know, whatever happened in the previous ones. While they're not reboots per se, it's like they don't really care what happened in the previous issues. And I know I didn't read the previous issue of the Hulk, so
yeah, but we talked about 14,
right? So. Right, but you know, I didn't read it. You know, I hadn't been reading the series, but that way. So
yeah, again, we came at it from different vantage points.
Yeah, none of that bothered me. And you know, when I read this issue, you know, I had a good reaction. I was like, oh, I like this. I'm going to read this series.
If this had taken place after the second arc in the previous series, it would have made perfect sense. The two were at odds, and at that point, the second arc in the previous series was the Hulk was the main character, and Banner was kind of the one taking over and doing, you know, what's he done now kind of a deal. And it very much would have led directly into this kind of a thing, where there's not a blatantly antagonistic relationship between the two characters, but the Hulk is being used, you know, to a very large degree here by Banner. Whereas, again, they worked past that in the previous three issues of the last series. I liked this issue as it was. I would give it a 4 out of 5. I would give the editor, however, a 2 out of 5. I think he really botched it. So what was your rating for this?
4 out of 5. It's like, you know, we had very different reactions and came to the same conclusion. So,
well, again, we're coming at it from different places because I had read the previous series, you had not. But, you know, my thought on the transition, again, goes to the editor, not to the creative team. They did what they set out to do, and I thought they did a good job doing it. Shall we move on to our other book, which is Clone Number 1 from Image Comics?
David, I'm going to guess, Schoolner and Juan Jose Rip on art. I like Juan Jose Rip. I like his art. This was an interesting story, you know, clone. So, you know, that's right there in the title. We can imagine from this that there is going to be somebody who is cloned and there are going to be clones in it. And that's pretty much what we get. The story itself, this is the kind of series that I personally find kind of hard to judge based on a single issue. I mean, I liked what was here, but it was an entire issue of kind of setting up the real premise of the series and kind of getting over the point, you know, that, you know, something's going on and there's some cloning conspiracy, let's say, going on. Maybe at this person's place of work, or is he a clone? Is he the original? You know, who knows at the end of this? I was intrigued enough that I'm going to keep on getting it, but it wasn't a first issue that really took me by surprise. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, that's something really different with the concept. It kind of played into what I kind of thought it was going
to
be.
Interesting. This may be another one where we wind up getting to the same place, but through different paths. I thought this was a decent first issue of a new series. I had no problem judging this issue just as it stands. Again, sci-fi aspect to it, but very much set in kind of the current day sort of reality we're familiar with. You know, it's not a alien space setup or something like that. So there's a lot, it gives us a frame of reference. Again, we're expecting the cloning stuff that brings in the sci-fi stuff. I thought the art was good overall. There were some oddities here and there, specifically with some of the special effects in the initial fight scene. You know, there are a few things where, you know, people are getting hit and kicked, and there's these weird glowy kind of, you know, effects, the energy-looking effects there, which seemed a little odd.
Yeah, I think that was just the colorist going a little nuts on the impact stuff. I noticed that. I didn't take that to be...
I took it to be bad FX, and And again, when the guy gets shot with the bullet and stuff, there are a few things with the blood splatter. Wow, getting tongue-tied. And the bullet path and a few things, again, seemed a little weird. But again, I chalk that up to just, you know, little oddities in the way they depicted some stuff. Nothing catastrophic, just unusual, not a big deal. But for me, where this falls a little bit short is things get set up and enough things happen that we get past the initial setup and the story feels like it started moving. It's not just, well, you know, we're going to have clones and tune in next week to get the rest of the story. I mean, we get some movement, we get some jeopardy, we get enough scenes, a fair amount happens in this issue. It still felt a little decompressed. It still felt like I should have gotten a little bit more in this issue than I did, which, you know, at first struck me as a little strange, given that it ended on kind of the right sort of a story beat. It's like, yeah, that's the note to end on. What I think this issue was lacking, we never get any real clue as to the why for the story. Why are these events happening? Why now? What changed? What's motivating things?
Yeah, I mean... I understand that they're going up, you know, there's some mysterious bad guy organization, let's say, to put it in its most simplified terms. But other than that woman who shows up, and obviously the one clone who's working on the other side, you know, you don't get any insight into, you know, like you said, why it's happening, what's the motivation on the other side. It's just, it's a mystery now, and it's kind of set up like that.
Well, even those two, we don't have any motivation. We know one of the clones is working for, one is working against the our lead character. You know, there are allies presumably on both sides, but no clue as to what is this fight that this guy is now finding himself stuck in the middle of. You know, is he going to be on the right side or the wrong side? Well, we don't even know what the sides are. We don't even know what they're fighting about. We don't know what's going on. I certainly don't expect all of that to get answered in a first issue. I expect at least some questions to get raised about it, other than what the hell's going on.
Yeah. I mean, pacing-wise, it felt to me like if this was a sci-fi movie, this was the first 10 minutes of the movie. You know,
this
kinda...
is the come with me if you want to live commercial break at the end of it, yeah.
So, you know, just kind of pacing-wise, it was... the kind of thing where it appears to be written as, okay, I've got this story that is X long, and this is the first 20 pages of it. And, you know, it's not, you know, when you're writing for a serialized comic, and that maybe we've talked about this before too, is I don't think a lot of people worry anymore about writing for a serialized comic because they're more interested in the fact that it's going to persist in trade form you know. And, you know, this is the kind of thing where it didn't appear that there was a lot of or any effort to make this kind of stand alone as a first issue, you know, with a care towards, let me craft something that's really going to get somebody to want to come back for the second one. It's just like, here's the first part of the story. If you like it, you'll come back. And well, I liked it. I'll come back. But well, there's kind of a fundamental difference, though, between those two styles of writing. I mean, because, you know, you and I both, I think, have heard different writers, including Wade, who, you know, wrote The Hulk, talk about how they kind of consciously structure an issue to make sure that there's certain beats and there's certain things that are included in an issue that moves the story along and does, you know, this, that, and the other thing in a particular story, because they're cognizant of the fact that they are writing a piece of a segmented fiction, you know, that sure, it'll be collected, but they're also aware of the fact that this is going to be a chapter that needs to kind of stand alone and exist as a single entity.
Well, the challenge with writing a comic book is you have a finite number of pages, and it is both a part of a larger thing often, but it is its own entity, it is its own whole. So, you know, as the part of a larger series, this issue worked. As a self-contained issue, again, it lacked the why is this happening aspect. And would it be fair to say that you were intrigued about this issue enough to keep going with it, but not hooked or sold on this premise in this title?
I don't even know if that's accurate. I mean, because...
So were you sold on the title?
I'm sold on the title. I'm going to get the title. And a lot of that has... But then again, a lot of that has to do with the art, right?
Is it something that's going to stay on your list or is it on a probationary status, is my point?
I am assuming that this is going to run its course over 6, 8, 10 issues. They haven't really, or at least I haven't noticed, if it's a limited series, but I'm going to guess that this is going to be something that's not set up as being a 60-issue series or an ongoing, but that there's a particular story to be told here. So I'm interested in reading that story.
All right, that's fair. I mean, to me, it's... I liked it enough, I'm going to keep going with it, but I didn't come out completely gung-ho on it either, saying, wow, everybody's got to read this. It's going to be on my pull list if I have to cut other things kind of a deal. To me, it's on there. It's got, you know, it's not like it's, well, I'm going to sample another one and maybe it'll stay. It's on there for the duration, but not, it's on there until it gets pushed off kind of a deal, I guess, is where it's at for me.
I mean, I look at it as, you know, especially because comics are that combination of story and art. If this had an artist that I was not a big fan of, I would have a very different opinion about whether I was going to be sticking around in the long term. I've liked Juan José Rip for a long time. I've read a lot of things that he's done. A lot of the stuff he's done has been like Avatar stuff that you wouldn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole, you know, very, very violent kind of thing. So seeing him doing more of a, you know, kind of mainstream sci-fi story, I like seeing that. But I really like him as an artist, and that's a big plus towards me wanting to keep this one around.
Yeah, I can see that. I think whether the art clicks with somebody or not is a deciding factor often. Doesn't matter how good the story is if you can't get to it through the art, or the art, you know, just turns you off for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, if I was indifferent to the art or something, it's like, you know, it was okay, you know, that kind of thing. But in this one, I really like the art, and I'll grant you that the, you know, the FX were a little goofy in some of the scenes. I mean, if I really want to get down to it, the amount of blood that this guy is bleeding, you know, it's like, man, if he was really bleeding that much, you know, that he would have been dead long before he pulled himself into this house. I mean, there's not that much blood in the body, I don't think, you know, for the amount that's like liberally spread all over the place and the blood trail this guy's leaving. But, you know, I kind of put those things aside because in general, I think Rip does a, you know, a pretty nice job on, you know, just people and faces and, you know, action and just his storytelling.
Yeah, again, overall, I thought he did a really good job. There are a few oddities here and there, but I liked the art. And again, while this felt like the beginning chapter and plus a little kind of a deal, it was a very full beginning chapter. We've had some starting issues, the starting one of not the last Hulk series, but the one before that with the Red Hulk. I mean, that had like 3-4 scenes in the opening issue and not much happened in any of them. And it felt very...
Is that
very,
the McGinnis one?
That was the Red Hulk one, yeah. The Loeb McGinnis one, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I mean, it may have been the first 10 minutes of the movie kind of a deal, but it was a very packed 10 minutes and a very, you know, action-y kind of a 10 minutes. Things happened. It's not like just a leisurely, you know, okay, it's the first 10 minutes, but we spend two of it watching the guy walk down the street kind of a deal, not knowing who he is. It's not like that at all. I would have liked to have seen more clues as to why the hell is this all suddenly happening now, you know, what's motivating people going after both, who's fighting and why, you know, what is the fundamental conflict of the series, at least some hints towards it. I think that would have strengthened this issue. I think they could have fitted in between the other stuff going on with just some dialogue here and there. Because we don't need answers. We need insights. We need questions to ask. But overall, I mean, to me, this was a 4 out of 5. It was a low 4 out of 5. Again, I'm staying with it more out of curiosity and intrigue than, yeah, man, they just totally sold me. I'm hooked on this. But, I mean, I'm going to be around for the future issues, so they kind of, you know, succeeded in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, I gave it a 4 out of 5 also. It's just... You know, and you were right. Different paths, same endpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They had several other number one issues that came out this week. I don't know how many of them. How many other number ones did you get a hold of this week?
Let me pull out my packing list and count them up.
Superbia is one that I believe that you would have gotten.
Yes, I got that, and I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, if you like the first series, I think you'll like this one too. I
doubt you're counting Minimum Carnage Omega number one, but I did get that. I got Captain America number one.
I will count it.
And then the only other number one I got was Bleeding Cool Magazine number one.
I did check out Captain America one. I really disliked it a lot. So I won't be continuing on with that series.
That was one where I think the basic premise of the series was ill-chosen. Let's take Captain America, let's put him on some alien planet or whatever. I mean, I think what they're going to do is kind of, let's do the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, let's do Americana-type stuff out of America. But why?
Someone was saying they harkens back to Kirby's Mad Bomb era, and I can see that. I really disliked that when it was coming out, so it's probably some... You know, one of the things that I really hit me the wrong way, but I don't think it bothered too many people, is just... Hey, it's just kind of a throwaway. Let's make Cap's dad a wife beater, you know, and have this violent wife beating scene for several pages just to show that he can overcome adversity and become a hero. And it's a, you know, gee, I've been reading Captain America for 40 years. The character's been around for 70 years or something. I always thought he was the most upstanding, moral, one of the greatest heroes at Marvel. And I never had to see him overcoming his dad being a violent wife beater in order to come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so adding that to his backstory, I think added zero to the character.
I would say it detracts from the character.
Yeah. You know, it's just that really bothered me about the issue. So it, you know, anyway, I won't go on. Red Judge Dredd number one from IDW. I was kind of lukewarm towards it. That's one that I don't think I'm going to... And I thought I was going to like that. I like the character Judge Dredd, but my exposure to Dredd has been like reprints from 2000 AD that they did back in the 80s, I think. And they reprinted a lot of the really classic stuff. And that was my... core baseline for Dredd, and I really didn't think that this issue kind of held up to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be interested, you know, if other people read it and have not any previous exposure to Dredd except maybe the movies, you know, what they thought of it. Certainly wasn't a terrible issue, but for me it was more like a 3 out of 5. Art wasn't really doing a lot for me, which, as we talked about in Clone, you know, I mean, if you had taken this art and stuck it in Clone, I probably wouldn't be keeping on with Clone either. If I would have taken Rip's art and put it in Dread, maybe I'd be sticking with Dread, you know. So I also got Comeback from Image. Did you get that one?
No, I did not.
That was an interesting one. You might actually like this one, so it might be worth trying to check out. This is another one of these sci-fi movie series, kind of like Clone. And the basic premise of this one is there's some shadowy organization where people kind of jump back in time and help make people kind of disappear into the future to, get past some challenging part of their life. Like maybe there's a crime they've committed and they want to get like plucked out. You know, they've kind of faked their death, but actually just kind of pop them out and bring them into the future.
Interesting.
You know, so there's kind of a little bit of a, you know, you got the agents who, you know, there's this team of guys that they go back into the past. It's not like Looper. I don't know if you saw Looper, but it's...
Is it on DVD yet?
No. And you haven't seen it.
Probably not. I don't make it out to the theater that often.
Anyway, it's kind of a... For people who are listening who saw Looper, it's not like Looper in that respect. But, you know, Looper had the, you know, agents who kind of... You know, there's the time travel aspect and you got the agents and things like that. That respect it. It had that kind of a vibe. But I really liked that issue. And I'll be picking up the Comeback series. I thought that one was pretty good.
Cool.
A couple of other great Valiant issues.
Yeah. XO, still a great series. They're doing good stuff at Valiant. I want to see them succeed.
I was thinking about, you know, what are my top five comic books that I'm reading right now? If I had to like pick, what are the top five books? And, you know, there's a couple of Valiant books in there. There's not any Marvel or DC. Well, actually there is a Marvel book in there. You know, it's Amazing Spider-Man, but that series is ending. So, you know, after Spider-Man ends, I don't know that there'll be any Marvel or DC books in my top five.
I will admit I'm really looking forward to 699 to see how Slott explains 698.
Yeah, 698 was I give him the benefit of the doubt on that one. I really hope that it doesn't harken all the way back to Ends of the Earth, or
I don't think it can.
I don't see how it can. I mean, there must have been something that happened off panel, maybe with those Octobots. You know, because they showed the little Octobot like kind of crawling out of the river and stuff. So if, you know, something went on there, you know, I'll assume that he's Natel some way of doing it. But, you know, I'm at the same time kind of afraid of how 700's going to go, because, you know, they've already stated pretty clearly that the new series, Peter's not Spider-Man. So,
well, based on 698, I can see where they're leading up to that. Yes,
I just hope they don't kill him. You know, it's just, but you know, whatever. I
would say for my top five, certainly among them would be World's Finest, probably Archer and Armstrong, because I think that's just a really fun title. I'd have to think about what would be the other couple I would hang on to.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Archer and Armstrong and Harbinger are the two Valiant titles that are in there. And of course, Walking Dead has always been one of my top ones. And
the Star Trek title, I think, would be one of the other ones for me. I'm really liking what they're doing there.
Yeah. But, you know, kind of like we've talked about this before, maybe it's just been on our forum, but you know, if you had to like cut back to 10 comic books or 20 comic books, you know, what would they be?
I am just so glad this is a theoretical discussion for me this year versus, say, about 4 years ago where I was actually cutting back significantly. I got down to under $100, and had I not gotten the job I did, when I did, I'd have had to cut back even further. So, and it was surprisingly easy to make some of those initial cuts sometimes. You know, like, of the books we did this week, you know, if I were really, really limited on my income and what I could spend on comics, yeah, I enjoyed Clone. Don't have to get that. Yeah, I enjoyed Blue Beetle. Don't have to get that. Yeah, I liked Indestructible Hulk. Don't have to get that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've made different choices, but, you know, it's just those are three I'd probably keep before other ones you would keep. But, you know, I kind of did that when I went from my 185 level, which is, you know, up around what you're still getting. You're getting more than that, I think. But,
Yeah, a
you
little bit
know, when
more.
I went from there down to 100, I mean, that was the thing that I did. I mean, I just kind of looked at it as like, well, do I need to get this book? Do I
I
even
think the
want to
difference
get this
is
book?
when I made this cut a couple of years ago, I was cutting to $100, not 100 titles.
Well, I mean, I
So,
could cut even more. You know,
yes, you
I could
could. I'm
look at
not
that 100.
encouraging that. It's already hard enough to pick
I'm
what
just
we're going to
saying,
review some weeks.
you know, I could look at the 100 titles and say,
Yeah.
you know, I could probably cut another 30 or 40 of them, you know, and then you get to the point where, you know, some people look at that like, wow, you know, that's a lot. But, you know, even like the top 50, I mean, there's 50 comic books I really enjoy every month. And even with the 100 titles that I'm getting now, I'm finding it much more so than when I was getting the 185. You know, when I open my box that I get from DCBS, I like flip through it and 80% of the books are, you know, I'm looking at and it's like, cool, I can't wait to read that. Cool, I can't wait to read that. Whereas when I was getting 185, you know, there'd be, cool, I can't wait to read that. Well, I don't care if I read that one just right away or not, you know, let's put it over there. And, you know, that was the kind of thing. It's like in the ones that don't have that immediate reaction of like, hey, I want to read that right away. That's
Well,
probably something I don't need to keep.
again, I think right now, with the way a lot of the stories are being told and stuff like that, is running kind of counter to the kinds of stories you want to be reading right now. And I don't think that, I mean, the lion's share of what's coming out from Marvel and DC, at one point you were getting, at this point you're not. Just because the direction they're going, the direction you want to go in and stuff like that. And there's nothing right or wrong about that, but it's a pendulum that swings, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of hoping, you know, with the new 52, because I mean, I started this before the new 52. New 52 came out. I read all of them, right?
Yeah.
And I'm getting probably half of them now, which is not bad. I mean, it's actually better than Marvel's doing, and they went Marvel now. I mean, I've been trying the number ones, but so far, the two that I'm sticking with are Thor and the Hulk. And it's kind of funny because boy, my pre-assumptions on those were terrible because I kind of was thinking, oh, I'm gonna love Fantastic Four. And I was kind of lukewarm on the Fantastic Four title. And I didn't think I was gonna like Thor, but when I read the first issue, I really loved it. You know, so I didn't quite think I was gonna like Captain America and Dimension Z. I disliked it for almost completely different reasons than I could have anticipated, you know.
Yeah.
Although the Dimension Z part didn't quite help either. And JR Jr.'s art is just, I've kind of like moved, you know, kind of like I'm moving towards liking Lenil Yu. I used to really like JR Jr. and now I'm just kind of like, I'm really lukewarm about his art.
I've been that way for a while. I think his art has gotten more, I guess, I don't say stylized, more pronounced, I think. It's still his style, but there's almost a thicker line work at times. Maybe it's a difference in ink or whatever, but at one point, 5, 10 years ago, I really liked his work. But then there was some point in the middle there that, it just stopped working for me as well. It became so blatantly his art, and it was starting to get in the way of the story for me. You know what I mean?
And you gotta, hey, I gotta give a shout out to the guys who designed that subway car trap in the first issue of Captain America. Not only do they trick Cap, but they set it up so that those handcuffs would jump out of that subway pole right where he happened to be holding on to it. Weak, weak sauce. Anyway, but you know, I'm liking those two so far. But I, it's about how many other ones have come out. So I read Fantastic Four, didn't care for it. Iron Man didn't care for it. Cap didn't care for it. X-Men, all new X-Men, not a big fan. So that's four. And then I like two. So I'm liking a third of the ones that I've read.
Yeah, and then there have been, again, like X-Men Legacy that you skipped. I'm trying to think which other ones you might have
Some of the
skipped.
ones that weren't number
Deadpool.
ones, yeah, I didn't get Deadpool.
Yeah, those are the main number ones that I'm seeing
Yeah,
so
I'll get
far.
FF. FF number one came out this week, so we'll get it next week, right?
Cool. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool. With this episode, the Comic Book Page podcast goes over the 700-hour mark. All 700-plus hours are available on the Comic Book Page website. Among those 700 hours are the previous 275 episodes of the Weekly Comic Spotlight. Bob and I have been reviewing a comic from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher each and every week since the shipping week of October 15th, 2007. We intentionally review comics a week or so after they hit stores, both so you have a chance as a reader to, you know, read the issue before listening to the episode if you want to, so we don't spoil stuff, and so the issues are still recent enough that you can usually find them on the rack at the local comic book store if, you know, after listening to the review, you say, hey, I want to go read that. Bob and I also do the monthly Mail Report Comics episodes in which we discuss the sales of the top 300 comics. Those episodes cover sales going back to December 2005, with Bob joining me as the co-host of those episodes as of the May 2007 sales data. Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library and I do a monthly Mail Report Trades episode in which we discuss the sales of the top 300 trades, or further back, top 100, top 50, top 10. Those episodes go back as far as the August 2006 sales data. Occasionally, Bob and I do a roundtable discussion episode covering a comic book-related topic or discuss a convention that Bob or I have recently been to. If you have a topic or idea for a roundtable discussion episode that you'd like to be part of, please let us know by email at theguys@comicbookpage.com. Sometimes we dive into the older comics and do a back-issue spotlight. Sometimes Bob and I do those. Sometimes Bob or I do them with some other listener. Sometimes we do it both with a listener. We haven't done one of those for a while. If you've got an idea for one of those, again, email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com. Our other monthly feature is the Preview Spotlight episodes, in which we play clips from our listeners highlighting cool items in the latest Previews catalog. The deadline for sending in submissions for the next Preview Spotlight, covering the December 2012 previews, is midnight, Friday, December 8th. If there's a title you like, please send in a short MP3 clip spotlighting that issue from that title that's in the December previews. Our goal with these preview spotlight episodes is to help boost sales of titles by helping match titles with the readers who would enjoy them. So if there's something you like and something you think other people would like, just record a clip telling us why we would like that, why we should be getting that. Let's help these creators out. Also on Friday, December 8th, is our monthly previews teleconference on Skype. We gather at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Pacific, which is all, coincidentally, the same time. We do that on Skype. There are instructions on how to join the Skype call on the forum. You can come and go as you want. Don't feel obligated to join right at the beginning or stay right to the end. Come when you can. We'll join you into the teleconference. It's basically a fun discussion about comics for a couple hours using the previews catalog as a nominal agenda. We do lots of digressions. It's a ton of fun. We do these podcasts for you, our listeners. Bob and I love comics. We want to help you get as much enjoyment out of reading comics as we do. Please sign up for the forum on the comicbookpage.com website. Join the podcast community. Bob and I aren't making a cent on this podcast, nor do we intend to. That's not our goal. Again, we're doing this because we like comics, we enjoy comics, and we like talking with other people who do too. So if you've got thoughts on these episodes, drop us a line. If you've got thoughts on topics we should cover, titles we should cover in the Weekly Comics Spotlight, sales questions you've got for the Mail Report, Comics or Trade episodes, things you'd like to discuss in a roundtable discussion episode, or things you want to spotlight on our next or any upcoming preview spotlight episodes, please participate in this. That's why we're doing this.
Join us next week when we discuss Justice League Dark number 14 from DC, FF number 1 from Marvel, and Masks number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.